But one of my great passions is marriage and helping couples through the private practice work that I do and speaking about marriage. So whenever I open up the Parsha and I look in to see the narrative, the story, I look for things that resonate with me as they pertain to this particular topic. And so tonight we're going to talk about the marriage of Noach and the challenges that Noach and his family confront in rebuilding a new world. Okay. So you should have the Makoros, the source sheets, in front of you. And we're going to delve into kind of a little bit of a journey here. And I'm going to share with you a bunch of different sources. Most you've probably heard, some you haven't. And I'm going to take maybe a little bit of artistic license as well to open our minds to think about things in some new ways. Bring in a little bit of psychology here. So, you know, when we read last week about Adam and Chava, we got the cast of characters, right? Like the scene opened and you know who you're watching and what's happening. Very prominent role for Chava. Fast forward to next week, we get Avram and Sarai. And again, you know, Sarai is the leading lady and, you know, she takes the screen and does a wonderful job with her role. But when you look at this week's Parsha, the leading lady is Eshes Noach. The Torah describes her as Mrs. Noach. And if you ask me, she should get like the Woman of the Year, Century, Millennium Award because she just followed her husband onto this boat and they shut the door behind them and said, great, let's leave everything behind and we're going to rebuild the future. Right? No questions asked. Most couples that I see, you can't get a sentence out without having a little bit of dialogue. Right? Some back and forth, a little banter. But not Mrs. Noach. And so I was really intrigued to try to understand more about what's happening in this dynamic between the two of them. So let's look at what happens when Hashem introduces the Mabul is coming. So on the first source of the page, we have the Pasuk Vakimosi es brisi itach, uvas el ateva. Hashem says, don't worry, Noach. I'm going to start over with you. You're going to come into the teva. Now look carefully. Who's coming into the teva? Ata uvanecha. Ve'ishtecha u'nesheva necha itach. See how I broke that up? You and your sons, and your wife, and your sons' wives. Very firm. Okay? Got the men on one side, the women on the other. Continues in Pasuk Zion, of Perek Zion, and the rain starts falling. Vayavo Noach uvanav. So who starts coming? Noach and his sons. Ve'ishto u'nesheivanav. And then again, the women come into the teva because mipnei me hamabu. See a little pattern for me? Okay, pasuk yud gimel. Ve'etzem hayom hazeh bo Noach. On that day, so Noach comes, and with whom else? V'shem v'cham v'yafas bnei Noach, lists his sons. And then again, ve'eshas Noach u'shloshas. The men come separately, the women come separately. It's a nice drizzle outside. It's a good day for a teva. Okay? But we got the men and the women separately. What does that tell us? So the Gemara asks this question in the next source, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, where the Gemara says in Daf Kuf Chesam and Beis, what's going on here? Why is the Torah specifically separating the men and the women? These are before the days when everyone got all fafrumped that everything has to be separate, right? So what happened? So the Gemara says that there was a ban, a prohibition on tashmish hamita, on physical intimacy between husband and wives. Uminalon denestru, how do you know that it was forbidden? Dichsiv, because it states in the pasuk, uvasel ateva atu v'necha. It says the men, and then it says v'ishtecha u'neshevanecha. And then it says the women. Since HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated the men and then separated the women, two different distinct groups, and then that teaches us a clear lesson, got to be separate. When we leave the teva, though, something different happens. The mabul's over. Destruction has ended. So what do we see? Tzei min ha-teva. Who is supposed to leave the ark? Ata v'ishtecha. You and your wife should leave the ark. Uvanach and your sons, uneshevanach itach, your sons with their wives. So you're going in separate, but you're leaving together. Such a beautiful idea when it's time to rebuild. Rebuild as husband and wife. Now, it makes sense when you think about it. How could there be intimacy in a time when the world is destroyed, is falling apart literally around you, right? So it captures the spirit of what's happening. So it continues now with the psukim that describe the departure. We read what Hashem told us to do. So now in chapter 8, verse 16, Tzei min ha-teva, the Almighty says it's time to leave the ark. Who? As we said, Ata v'ishtecha, husband and wife. And v'nachu nishev anacha, your sons with their wives. So what happened? Fast forward two verses. And v'yetze Noach, and Noach went out, uvanav, and his sons. Okay? V'ishto nishev anav, and his wife with his sons' wives. That wasn't the commandment, was it? But that's what it says. So that's pretty curious. Some dynamic, husband-wife dynamic here is begging to be asked about. So in the next source, the Riva explains.
Who is the Riva?
Good question. Vayetze Noach, uvanav, and Noach, I don't recall off the top of my head, I apologize. Noach and his sons go out, so he says as follows. Ha Yelolomar should have said, as we describe, Ayetze Noach v'ishto, because that's what God said to do. Leave Noach with your wife, hand in hand, like leaving the chuppah as a couple, right? Leave together. Kivan shehutru b'tashmish amita, because now physical intimacy is once again permitted. So what happened? So here's the Riva's suggestion. Maybe the reason it says it is because there's a little technical part of the ark you didn't realize. That inside the ark, you had the men that were in one room, and the women in another room. And therefore, when the Torah says they went out, it doesn't say they left the ark, it says they left. So maybe it means they each left their rooms. Those who were in the men's rooms left, and the women's rooms left. So that's a good technical way, a safe way for us to get around this problem. But we got to go a little bit deeper. So there's a medrash that says, in the following source, second to last on the first page, so vayetze Noach, v'lo kibol alav lashuv al ishto, ulis asek bepiri yivarivya. Guess what? Noach had no intention on returning back into the arms of his wife, to once again engage in pru uravu. Why? Because he was afraid. What was the fear? Because maybe the Lord's going to destroy the world again. Is that a world I want to bring children into? I just literally saw everything and everyone destroyed. I'm not very hopeful about the future. So the Medrash says that he was misyare. He was afraid. And I sometimes hear in the clients, the patients that I speak to, you know, the idea of anxiety is a very powerful one. It's very common. A lot of people at different stages of their life confront anxiety. But anxiety isn't always a bad thing. Right? If you go to a mountain, you stand on the edge and you look all the way down, anyone whose feet are inches away from the edge and doesn't have anxiety should schedule an appointment. Because it's natural to be nervous, to be anxious. One slip and my life is gone. So we have to realize that fear and anxiety have a place. But where does fear come from? So you have two different aspects of it. There's going to be the anticipatory fear. In other words, I'm concerned that if I go to the edge, I might slip. I've never fallen off a mountain before. I have no reason to think I'll fall, but I don't want to take a chance. And then there's the learned fear. The phobia that says, you know what, I once experienced something terrible, I'm afraid it's going to happen again. And with that comes PTSD, a sense of trauma, where the brain is hypervigilant, saying, be careful, you've already been burned. I don't want you to get burned again, so play it really safe. So when Noah says, I'm afraid, is it just he has no hope, and he's down, and he says, you know, maybe this is going to happen again? Or is it because he actually experienced a reason to think that Pru-Ravu is doomed? So if you look at the last source on the page, The Gemara in Sanhedrin continues and tells us, Tanu Rabbana, Shlosha Shimshu Bateva, the Kulam Laku. There were three who engaged in Pru Revu, in physical intimacy, while on the ark, and they were all punished. And who were they? Kelev, Orev, and Cham. And the Gemara explains that because they were each intimate, they each suffered a specific punishment. Kelev Nikshar, the dog gets tied up by a rope or a chain, and it says the Orev rake it spits, and Cham Lokeb Oro, that his skin color changed. So those are the Gemara's explanations, which tells us that maybe Noach's fear, his very human, if you will, concern about Pru Revu may still be doomed, might be rooted in the fact that we just saw that a punishment actually happens for Pru Revu. Do you want to play with fire and take a chance? I know we're told we should, but I'm scared. It's not that I don't have hope in the future of the Almighty's world. I just don't want to get punished like they did. Okay. So the question that we ask ourselves now is, you're living in fear. You're not sure about the future. How in the world are you supposed to take on the task of, what's Noah's task? Rebuilding a destroyed world. How do you do that? So if you turn to the top of the next page, Pasuk that we read, we're going to journey back into Parshas Bereishis. Famous Pasuk, husband and wife are introduced the concept of marriage. Al kein yazov ish, a person should leave as aviv as imo b'davak b'ishto. You get married, it means you leave your father's house, you leave your mother's house, the yula basar achad, and you shall be one flesh. That is the idea of what it means to build a world, and in Noah's case, not build a world, but rebuild a world. You need to have a sense of a marital union between husband and wife. I can't tell you how many times a week I sit with couples in counseling where the issue that they're bringing up is the alliance that my spouse has to his parents over me. The alliance that my spouse forms with another family member makes them a priority instead of me. And so you start getting into, you know, in-law and parents and outlaws and whatever other issues that kind of get in the way of a couple. And it's not only younger couples, but I see it all the time. And I explain to them that this pasuk, by the way, is a fascinating pasuk. Because what's the Almighty say? That you want to know what marriage is? You leave your parents behind and you cling to your spouse. Okay. If you really want to teach me that lesson, right? Why not teach it to me by someone who actually had parents? You're going to tell me this example by the one couple in all of history that never had parents? Tell it to me by Avram and Sarah, Lech Lecha. They departed, they made their own journey, and they became their own family with their own values. Therefore, you should leave your parents' house, like Avram and Sarah did. Why does it say it by Adam and Chava? So perhaps we can suggest that the reason is because that is the extent to which a husband and wife need to work on becoming basar echad. You can't be one when you still have one foot in your childhood home, or that your mother is on speed dial quicker than you would talk to your partner, your spouse. So we have to think about what it means to really be basar echad. So when we dig deeper into Parshas Bereishis, we find in source number 2 that this notion already was challenged. And the Torah tells us about a fellow named Lemech. Ayikach lo Lemech shtei nashim. First person in history to marry 2 wives. Shema achas Ada. The name of the first one was Ada. V'shema shenis was what? Sila. Rashi comes along and says, who are these 2 wives, Ada and Sila? What do you need 2 wives for? Right? Even if marrying 2 wives today were permitted, show of hands, how many men think they could handle it? Don't raise your hands. Right? If anyone could perfect marriage with 1 woman, then they already, you know, get all the credit. And vice versa. It's not an easy thing, marriage. So to marry 2 wives, what do you need 2? So along comes Rashi. Shtei nashim. Well, he says, Kach haya darkan shel dor hamabel. This is what was happening already in the generation of the flood, which was the harbinger to the corruption that led to the demise of the world. Achas lepiria verivia, 1 wife you had to procreate with. Achas letashmish, and the other you would use sexually. And Rashi explains further their names. Ada, he shall Puria Varivya, and Tzila, he shall Tashmish. So we know which wife is which. And Tzila, Hashem Shiyosheves, Talmud, but Tzila, she sat in his shade, so to speak. Kind of waited in the wings for him. Okay? So, is this ideal, the Torah's message of Ayul Basar Echad, that you'll become one? We already see that the Adam and Chava model is already gone. And already here we're entering the Dar HaMabel and the respect for the marriage is degrading. Right? The respect for a woman is degrading. Because I'm not looking at her as my friend, as my partner, as Basar Echad, as we went on a journey from our home of origin to where we are to build our own home. Instead, it's, no, you're going to be for children, you're going to be for my selfish needs. So it's clearly a very unhealthy bond that we see forming. So is any good going to come of this? So let's see what happens in the next Makor we have is chapter 4, verse 20 to 22. So we get the lineage that's born from this union of Lamech and his two wives. And it says, V'telech adas yava, huha yavi yoshev ohel mikna. So Yaval was this, the shepherd, beautiful trade. Shem Achav, he had a brother, Yuval. He was called Toves Kiner Ugav. He was a musician, played with the instruments. Then we have the second wife, the one who was used for his selfish gratification. What about her? Did she have kids? She did, which logically shouldn't have happened based on what the purpose was. The Mefarshim explained that usually they would give them something to drink that would make them barren, and therefore they wouldn't have to worry about children. But, okay, she had kids. Bitzila Gamhi Yalda as Tuval Kayin. That was the first child, and the pasuk ends, and he worked with all sorts of implements, with metals, and va'achos Tuval Kayin Na'ama, and Tuval Kayin had a sister named Na'ama. Okay, we'll come back to this in a moment. The next source, we have to try to unpack this pasuk. So Rav David Zvi Hoffman, Hungary, 1843, says Ada Tzila Na'ama. What? Tumuahi. This is perplexing. Shakasav Mefarich Mosan Shal Neshe Lemech. We barely need to hear about Lemech. We need to know about who his wives were. They're not even like secondary characters in the story. They don't really play a role. Umistaba Shein Ze Ela Mishum Shehein Muskoris Bashira Bipsukim Chav Gimel Chav Dalad Lahalan. Why do we mention them? Because stay tuned. There's about to be another narrative in two more verses where it's going to be important for us to know who's who. This, therefore, is just by way of introduction. And then he concludes with this line, Ach Yoser Tzmua, but I got to tell you, it's a little more perplexing. Sha'akasav Masker Shemo Es Shem Achoso Shal Tuval Kayin, that we bother mentioning Tuval Kayin's sister, the Eina Muskeres Ode, B'Shuma Komacher. Her name cannot be found anywhere in the Torah, in any other place. Right. So clearly, she doesn't seem to play any role. Why is she mentioned? Okay. Oh, so now let's take a look at this Shira. So if you look at the next source, this is chapter 4, verse 23. So now we get this perplexing poem. The words are confusing. The message is weird. This is the first time in the Torah that we have recorded that a husband ever spoke directly to his wife. Adam and Chava, there's no dialogue recorded. But even here, this is not a dialogue. We have only a monologue. It's not until Avram and Sarai that we actually have a conversation. First time a husband ever spoke to a wife in the history of the Torah, which recorded a conversation, was when Avram turned to his wife Sarah after schlepping to Mitzrayim, and she was a mess and she was dirty and right, you smell after being on the road all that time, riding on a camel. And he turns to her and he says, now I realize what a beautiful woman you are. That's the first conversation that we have in the Torah. But this is the first monologue. This is the first thing I ever said to you, and you see why it's a monologue. Because look at the words. Vayomer Lemech Lenashav and Lemech said to his wives, Ada Vitzila, Shman Koli, listen to my voice. Nishe Lemech, you wives of Lemech. Can you feel the affection? Hazinim Rasi, right? Pay attention. Listen, again, to my words. Okay? Ki ish haragti lefitzi, v'yeled l'chabu rasi. And I gave you just that one. There's many different versions of the translation based on the commentary here. And the one I have here is, "For I've slain a man for wounding me, a young man for bruising me." No context, no story. I killed someone, a young man, and bruising me. What's happening? And then he says further, "Kishavasayim yukam Kayin, the Lemech Shivim v'Shiva." If Cain is avenged 7 times, then Lemech me, what, 77 times? Is it rhetorical? Is it a statement? It's very confusing, and that's why the Mefarshim call it a Shira. It's one of these verses that have a deeper meaning, but aren't necessarily clear on the surface. So Rashi comes along to give us a little bit of clarity, and we'll spend a few moments trying to unpack this. Okay, so Rashi says, I'm sorry, what time is Marv? Okay, great. Rashi says, Sheman Kulif, bottom of the page. Listen to my voice. Rashi says, Shahayu Porshos Heimenu Mitashmish, that you have a situation where both wives separated themselves from their husband from being physical. Now, wait a second. At least one wife we know is dedicated just for that purpose. So here you've got this husband who's saying, we got a problem in the home. Okay. So Rashi goes on further. Why is it that these two wives separated themselves? Rashi says, Lefisha harag es kayin, ves tuval kayin beno. Because he killed, he was responsible for the death of Cain, right? The elder Cain, and we all know Cain is the one who killed his brother Hevel, right? Had the mark of Cain, okay? And he then also killed his own son, Tuval Cain, okay? Rashi continues, how did this possibly happen? Shehaya Lemech Suma, because Lemech was a blind man. The Tuval Cain, Moshko, and he would go out, let's say, hunting with Tuval Cain, and Tuval Cain would push him around and guide him as to what to do. And he saw Cain out in the distance, in the bushes maybe, he looked like an animal from far. And he said to his father, Amar la'aviv, limshoch bekeshes, go ahead, fire, right there, aim and fire. Vahargo, and he killed him. Kivan shiyada shuhu, Cain zikno, when he realized this was the great elder Cain that he just killed, right? So he got kaf el kaf, he banged his hands together, just out of grief. And in the punching of these two hands, he didn't see that Tuval Cain was standing right in front of him. And Nebuch tells us, Rashi says, that he killed his own son. His wives were so aggravated over the fact that their husband is now a double murderer that they don't want to be near him. So if we wanted to look at this psychologically, we're not going to very deeply, but you know, you can understand that he was struggling, perhaps as a blind man, right, looking for grasping in the darkness, wanting to feel a sense of accomplishment, to go hunting, to do something. He's appeasing his wives. There's a loneliness that he feels in a world that's all dark to him. And he wants to feel again. He wants to have them back. And so they separate themselves because there's something about this action, this encounter that was very uncomfortable for them. So we got to dig a little bit deeper, though, to get more clarity. Top of the next page. One of the midrashim. It's a very legitimate question. So in the top of the next page, one of the midrashim that we have tells us, "Vayomer lemech lenashav." Rav Yosi bar Chanina amar tivan l'tashmish. They had the physical urge, the desire to procreate, to be physical with each other. Amrulo machar amabul ba v'niya peros v'rovos l'ma'ara. Right. We want to be intimate. But do we really want to be intimate in a world that we know is going down the tubes? Right. So you know what? They were thinking, let's separate. Right. Who wants to have kids in this world? And so we go on one step further where we have the quote from Shadal of Shmuel David Lutzato. Ki ish haragti, he says, I killed someone. Which explanation? How do we read the verse? A lot of different ways to punctuate it. So he says, Hanachon ki targum unkelis. What does targum unkelis tell us in how to read the pasuk? Shehu lashon tema. So you got to read the story with a question mark. Klomar, as if to say, lo haragti adam ki kayin shaharagas achiv. Look, ladies, don't equate me, I'm a good guy here. Don't equate me with Cain, who had malice and intent to kill his own brother. Why? Right? Because what I did was an accident. Because if the Almighty can forgive Cain after just seven generations, kal v'chomer, how much more so? Should the Almighty take vengeance upon me who did nothing wrong? What, do you want to punish me for 77 generations? I didn't do anything. It was an accident. And manslaughter at best. They're not going to lock me up. What did I do? And so he's using this as a plea. This is why it's a shira. Because he's poetically trying to appease his wives who were withdrawing from, saying, we're not comfortable with you. We don't want to have children in a world that's going down the tubes. And they're just not comfortable. And he's like, look, I'm a good guy. I'm a good guy. Look the other way. Okay? So this all begs the question, the fact that he was having so much agmas nefesh, so much inner turmoil, that the Torah feels it necessary to specifically tell us that he's appeasing his wife. He's appealing, please take me back. What's going on? Why is he talking to his wives? Why doesn't he stand up in the town square, clap on the bima? Ladies and gentlemen, I have your attention, please let me clear the record. Or I'll post it on Facebook. What I did was an accident. Don't hold me accountable. You have to go crying to your wives? Right? What is it about the marriage that Lemech had that the Torah found it necessary to tell us this little poem? So when the Pasuk tells us in the middle of the page, Pasuk, it's 4:19, Vayikach lo Lemech shtei nashim, shei ma'achas adar, shei ma'ashenes tzila, comes along the Kliyagar. And the Kliyagar gives us a beautiful explanation, taking us on a little bit of a journey to understand what was happening in not just his marriage, but to understand marriage as an ethic. The intentions that one enters into marriage makes all the difference. Okay. And we'll read this together. Vayikach lo Lemech shtei nashim, he takes two wives. Kol hasipur halazeh, this whole story, me'inyan shtei nashav adav etzila, about his two wives, adav etzila, yesh bo tzorech gadol batorah. This is not arbitrary. This is necessary to write in the Torah. Why? Leida ulohodia, to know and let it be known. Shekeshar yiyah hazivug kahugan, if a couple is intimate and they come together in what is known as kahugan, as an appropriate way, l'kayim hamin levad, because you want to have the next generation, az yuldu lehem banim hagunim shomrei mishmeres Hashem, you will be blessed with children that are, in fact, shomrei mishmeres Hashem. However, v'chasher loha yu l'kayim hamin, if you're not doing it for that purpose, ki im l'shem yofi, you're doing it because she's beautiful, or lamalos rasam tavoso, to just fulfill your primal animalistic desires, then azbanim zorim, yuldu lahem zera mireim banim mashchisim, you're going to have this terrible, terrible children. So the intention, says the Kliyakar, impacts the type of child that you will have. That's a very deep Kabbalistic idea. Okay, so it goes on a little bit further. Shman ada yuldu banim hagunim. When we had Ada giving birth to these proper children, Sh'amar v'telet Adas Yavol. So what is special about Yavol? Well, his career tells us something about him. What do we know about his career? He was Yoshev Ohel Miknah. The idea of being out there a shepherd. Right? Come on, in Jewish tradition, a shepherd is a pretty hailing job. Kizeh haya umnaso shel Hevel HaTzadik. Right? Hevel had that job. Achrab kol yishrei leiv, all of the righteous straight of heart. Kimosha, the David, right? Those ones, the common Nevi'im with tzaddikim, how many other prophets and righteous people had that great job of being a shepherd, right? A job that says, Kizachu l'dibuk hashchina, where you get to cling to the shchina. Okay. What about the next son, the brother, v'shem achiv Yuval, hu haya avi kol tovis kinar ugav, he was the musician. Again, he says, Shenivru lahalo behem labore olam, with music, hey, you could sing great praises to the Almighty, as we say in Tehillim, halalu benevel yechinor. Those instruments are for praising Hashem. Beautiful. So you got two children who are each taking on the Jewish career. Doesn't anything about hedge funds and lawyers and everything else, but that came later. V'tzila shalakach l'shem tashmish. What about lemas like tzila who he took for his own selfish gratification? Mikal makom l'sof banim zarum yuldulo. Right? He had children that didn't work out, weren't good. Right? And it explains, shenemar v'tzila yolda gam hi es tuval kayin, shehechzir maisa kayin l'makomo. Tuval kayin, even the name, was sort of a reenactment of Cain. The Tuval Cain guided the father in the death of Cain. It was sort of this cycle. Right? And what did it say his career was? He worked with metals. Uvore kli mashkes l'chavel r'tech, implements that you would use for damaging. Weapons of war, swords, spears, things that you use to hurt other people. So his name, his career, were all informed by the fact that his intention, the intention of his creation, already was tainted. A very deep idea. It's appropriate to learn this beautiful lesson of what it means to have a good Jewish union, a heilige union that's holy. Okay? Fascinating kli yakar. So this now brings us to understand that his marriage was a disaster because he went into it with the intention to be selfish, at least with one of his wives. So what happens in a marriage when that is the framework? So it breeds what's known as contempt. So in the couples therapy that I do, I'm trained by Dr. John Gottman. And if anyone's heard of John Gottman, the Gottman Method, Google it. He's like my Rebbe, the global authority on what makes marriages work. He's somebody that has studied marriages for 40 years in a laboratory setting, that if he watches a couple have an argument, within 3 minutes, Dr. Gottman can predict whether they're going to stay together or get divorced. There's a lot of chutzpah to do such a thing. What's his accuracy rate?
High.
High, yeah. 94%. 94%. That means that there are things we now know, and this is why I love working with couples, there are things that we know that are measurable and observable, that if couples are doing X, they're going to be in trouble, but if we replace it with Y, they might be okay. So it's amazing to use that science and research to help couples, but he found that there are four things that couples do. Calls them the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Things that if you do, you see these four things, you're in trouble. And very quickly, those four things are criticism, contempt, stonewalling, and defensiveness. Fortunately, we don't have time tonight to go through all four of them, but contempt is the most toxic of all of them. And I have a little quote here from his book on why marriages succeed or fail. And he writes, when contempt begins to overwhelm your relationship, you tend to forget entirely your partner's positive qualities. At least while you're feeling upset. You can't remember a single positive quality or act. The immediate decay of admiration is an important reason why contempt ought to be banned from marital interactions. They even found, by the way, people who had contempt several years later had a statistically significant higher rate of infectious disease. What does getting, you know, strep or ear infection or bronchitis have to do with feeling contempt, disgust towards your spouse? Because it's toxic. Your body enters a state of stress and your own immunity gets compromised. So what we're describing here is that the relationship where his wives didn't want to be with him and he felt alone and the intentions were selfish, there was clearly some contempt going on. There was some animosity or resentment that was brewing in this relationship. Something unhealthy that the Torah takes time to record this incident. So the question on the bottom of page 3 is, well, where in this whole story, as we're trying to build and rebuild a world, do we find that marriage is going to be preserved? So we end the page with a Medrash Brachos Rabbah, where it says, Amar Noach, Eich Eitzev Eya Parav Rabbah L'Ma'ara, as we mentioned earlier, how can I go into the world and procreate until I get a guarantee from the Almighty? When Hashem says the rainbow and the bris, there won't be another flood, then maybe I can have confidence. But until then, I'm still living with the fear, the anxiety, the crisis, and the trauma of what I just saw. And it's not easy to say, oh yeah, I'll have kids and bring them into this world. Right? Because the world as we saw before wasn't just about the corruption. The marriage of Lemach gives us an insight into sort of the nature of what was happening in the relationship. Now, I was just thinking about this and question, is this the only time we have in history where people looked out and the Torah said, you know what? The world is really, this is not a place to have children. I don't want to bring children into this world. Hizkiyahu. Amram. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu also separated from his wife, right? It was a different reason, right? But the idea, for instance, when we think about Amram and Yocheved not wanting to have children, right? They already had Miriam and they had Aaron. It's enough. This Egypt thing is not good. Not a nice place to raise kids. It's no Teaneck, New Jersey. So therefore, they separated, right? Until the Gemara says, Rabbi Seinu Amru, Shalach Achar Eitzas Bito, along comes Miriam, the Halakha Miriam, and she was able to give them a little bit of Musar, a little insight into the fact that it's better to have children in such a world, right? So how fortunate are we that we had a Miriam so that we would have a Moshe Rabbeinu, okay? So who is the Miriam in this story? That's what I'm looking for. I want that heroine who's going to step up. So in the third source, we now go back to something we said earlier, right? We said that Tubal Cain had a sister. Her name was Naama. And says the Medrash, Naama, he ishto shel Noah. That was Noah's wife. Why was she called so? He nikras kach mishum shayu maisem maseha ne'imim. Because her maisem, her deeds, were sweet. They were kind. They were gentle. There was something beautiful about the way that she acted. And the Ramban says further, the next source, Naama shayu maseha na'im une'imim. It was some real special quality to her. Niskavnu lomer shahayu l'shem bedoro. She had a reputation in the generations, in those times. He hoised tzadikas. No, leave the tzadikim. Not only was she righteous, she would birth tzadikim. L'chein yizkiren ha'kasav. Why does the Torah mention what we said, a character that only shows up once in the entire Torah and has no role? Because it was actually Naama who was the one who was responsible to carry on the future of the world, who was to bring forth generations of tzadikim. So my question is, and I have it here, why did the great tzadikas Naama not take her husband out of the ark and take on that Miriam-like way and say, come on, let's rebuild the world? That was what I was kind of hoping for as the story was ending. And if you read in the next pasuk, it's Perachas Pasuk Yutas, it says something interesting. They leave the ark, and then it says, Kol Achaya, Kol HaRemes, V'Kol HaOf, all the animals, they leave, L'mishpechoseihem, Yatzu Min HaTeva. First time in history we have the word mishpacha. And it's talking about animals. Right? What do you mean the animals? Right? They left together. And the Yerushalmi and Tainus in the next source tells us, L'mishpechoseihem yatzu, Amar Achiya bar Abba, L'mishpechoseihem yatzu min ha-teva. Why? Ayedei sheshamru yichoseihem, zachu linatzel min ha-teva. They preserved the integrity of the yichos. Right? However you want to interpret yichos, right? The generation, the integrity of the family structure, the unit. The chamas that destroyed the world was there was an interbreeding between species. Here, the animals were saying, we are a mishpacha. And we have to act as a mishpacha. There's a husband giraffe, and there's a wife giraffe, and we're going to be a family of giraffes. And yet, what we see is that when Adam and Chava are leaving the teva, they don't leave as a mishpacha, right? Not as a husband and a wife. And instead, something is missing. So when we go back to this pasuk, Tzila Gam Yelda is Tubal Cain, right? Yeah, we have that whole mess with Tubal Cain and Tzila, right? Nebuch, this woman, what she was used for, and she had children, and she lost a child, but who is her gem? She had a Naama, right? So what do we know from that? What can we suggest? What can we think about? So I have here an idea that psychology, I get a little bit of artistic license. That John Bowlby and Mary Ainsworth are the founders of a school of thought called attachment theory. Monotropy, what they refer to it as, is where you basically have an early attachment in life, usually to the mother, and that model, the paradigm of the attachment, becomes how you relate to other people, and then how you even apply yourself in certain circumstances in life. The way in which I related to my early attachments, so if it was a traumatic attachment, I will go through life in it with a sense of insecurity. If I was made to feel secure, I'll go through life more confidently. And so perhaps I started to wonder, is it possible that when we start thinking about what did Naama see growing up, that story of Lemech that we couldn't understand why it's even there, right, where the wives are separating, what did she see? She grew up seeing her mom take a step away from her dad and say, no, we're not doing this together. We're not arm in arm. Don't come near me. And yet we find it interesting, something to think about, that when they come out of the teva, Naama, who was the right character, so to speak, the original potential of Miriam, could have, but she wasn't raised to take her husband by the arm and be that loving, supportive wife. But instead, she went quiet. She followed Noah wherever he went, Eishes Noah, into the Teva. Didn't really have that strong identity, but she was still nonetheless a great tzaddikus. And we'll end with this. The Radak says that there was anxiety. The Radak says, Shahana Kevos Yiru. The women were afraid, let's say, to just step out of the ark, even though Hashem said go out together. They didn't want to. They were still terrified. The anxiety of the flood was upon them. They said, husband, men, you guys, you go first. I'm not going out there. And the Medrash Agadah says, Vayetze Noah, Lokiba Lav Lashul Ishto. He didn't want to go back to his wife. Noah wasn't ready to engage in Pru Uravu. Again, Bnei Shaya Misyari. Because he was afraid. He was afraid. So can we just honor the fact that anxiety, that stress, that fear is a human quality? And I don't mean to, in any chas v'shalom way, say this clearly, to reduce the greatness of our patriarchs and our matriarchs and our forebears. But it's something to think about. And I want to end with a quote that I saw in a scholarly article from one of the trauma journals. I do trauma and crisis work as well. And so I was reading this. It's stemming the tide of trauma systemically, the role of family therapy. And the quote says as follows. On the basis of available research, we assert here that the family is the most important unit of intervention for helping the traumatized individual. And so, something to think about. When we read of the anxiety, the yira that Noah had, the yira that Naama had, right? It's understandable. But it wasn't just the first time. When we have complex cases of PTSD, complex PTSD is very difficult to treat. She suffered PTSD as a child also, watching a turbulent marriage. Clearly, anyone that would have grown up seeing her mother being used like that and seeing the parents separate, that's traumatic. And so leaving the ark, maybe the Teva experience was reliving a different trauma. Maybe that was just hard. The yira was there, the anxiety and the fear was there, that it was hard to just leave as Hashem said. And maybe the idea that we can take away is to learn from what we saw from the animals, to just not overthink it, is to just embrace the fact that you can be mishpachoseha, you can be a mishpacha, you can be a family as you are, and to learn how to just stand together as a family and take one foot in front of the other. Thank you very much. Wish everyone a wonderful night and a good Ner Shabbos.